Do we see maybe Lane Hutson go on that list next year?
Lane Hutson will be on the list. I'm calling it right now. Lane Hutson will be on the list next season. He will be. Honestly, let them do whatever they want. If they want to do 10 Michigan flips at night, like, fucking
I don't know about that, but I think part of the issue, too, is I think he puts too much pressure on himself because he knows how good he is. Trust me, he knows. Guys like that, they know how good they are, and he sees how bad the team is, and I'm sure he's putting pressure on him. He's like, I got to fix this.
Welcome to the Checking From Behind podcast. I'm your host, Zach, as always, joined by my co-host, Preston. We are now officially in the deadest part of the season, and we have literally no news to go over except just a couple of players that ended up re-signing contracts. First up, Jets re-signed Dylan Sandberg to a 3x $5.75 million a year contract. This is a steal, in my opinion, for the Jets, or at least a very value contract.
I think it's a little over what I would be comfortable with. I think five would have been a sweet spot, but I think a lot of people will look at this contract from the outside. Not, you know, Jets might not be a team a lot of people watch just because the nature of the market and the stuff they're in. I know they're a good team. I'm not trying to say that they're bad, but Sandberg, at least as far as I know, is not a really well-known name around the league. But, you know, I was looking at his analytical stuff and his stats, you know, from these last year, and kid's an analytical darling.
Yeah.
He, according to Evolving Hockey, which is a site we use to get most of our analytical data, really good stuff there. He's in the 90th percentile total for all players in the league, 90th in offense and 91st in percentile in defense. So if you don't know what that means, the percentile means essentially the higher you are, the closer you are to 100. So like if you're in the 99th percentile, you're better than 99% of players in the league in that metric. So the higher, the better. And so him, you know, being probably a second pair defenseman, being in the 90th percentile is really, really, really outstanding.
It is kind of crazy because, he doesn't get a lot of recognition to his name. He's one of those players where when you see Instagram posts or just social media posts of accounts being like, what's this player? And it'd be like player recognition low, but then like their production high. That's Dylan Sandberg in a nutshell. Yeah. He is part of the glue that keeps the Winnipeg Jets running on that blue line. And overall, he'd be a first pair defenseman on probably a majority of teams in the league. Obviously, you know, I'm not saying he's some like top 10 or 15 defenseman in the league, but he's one of the better two-way defensemen in the league and one of the more underrated players in the league, which we'll get to in a little bit. And overall, I mean, his playoff production, it doesn't dip at all. His regular season production is phenomenal.
He's an ice hog, too. He plays 21 plus minutes a night for the Jets. He's clearly an important player to them. And I'm going to keep saying this all off season when we see these contracts come in, is they might seem a little high at first, but you really have to understand the cap is going up. And so by the time this contract, he's in the last year of this deal, it's going to be the equivalent to like $4.5 million.
Players and agents are going to start pushing for these higher contracts.
We got to get from, as a fan and like someone who looks at the NHL from the outside, we got to get used to players getting paid more. It's just inevitable at this point with the cap going up so much in such a short amount of time. Eventually, a third or fourth line guy is going to get getting like $2 or $3 million a year, which nowadays would be like, what? That's insane. Well, he's a third liner. Why are you paying him $3 million?
This is the same thing that happened in 2000 and 2010 where, I believe in 2000, the highest paid contract was like $8 million or something. And now $8 million is like here's a second line 65-point scorer.
Yeah.
And now it's like Connor McDavid might be due up for $60 million, which
Connor McDavid's going to get whatever he asks for.
Probably close to 20% of the cap. If you guys didn't know, 20% is the most player can get, by the way. For those.
That would be insane. One player 20% and then they're paying Draisaitl as much as they are.
If he gets 16, I know we're going off track, but real quick, if he gets $16 million on his next deal, that would be the same amount percent of the cap that he had when he got his $12.5 million deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's worth every penny of that, but that's just still a crazy number in my brain.
That is. Sticking in the Western Conference, but in the Pacific Division, the Kings and RFA Alex Laferriere agree on a 3x $4.1 million deal. Laferriere, a solid middle six guy for the Kings, and honestly, he could be listed as close to an underrated guy as well. He adds to the LA Kings depth, and overall, I mean, playing what 14, 15 minutes a night for the LA Kings. Solid contract.
Yeah, he's a good depth guy, good glue guy for that team.
This is one of the contracts where it feels like it's fair value, but also some people might look at it and be like, $4.1 million for a guy like him. And again, the same point you brought up where we have to get used to these contracts being $4 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's an important piece, another underrated piece for a playoff team. You know, these kinds of guys are important if you want to have any success in the playoffs. And I think the Kings are on the cusp of finally giving over that hump into the second round. We'll see if they can finally beat the Oilers. They might be matched up against them again this year. But I think they're making the right moves on paper.
They are, except their defensive core.
Yeah, Cody Ceci.
Yeah, and Cody Ceci. Brian Dumoulin.
Brian Dumoulin's not as bad as Cody Ceci.
Yeah, but like giving him four by, what is it, like 4 or 5?
You know what? He's focused on the now.
Yeah,
Cody Ceci, I know he's a name we like to make fun of a lot, but he's not that bad.
What if the Kings go out and just like put up a historical season in franchise history and
then lose in the first round
to the Oilers?
No, they'll probably lose in the first round of Utah. Calling it now.
So LA is gonna have to.
They're gonna win the President's Trophy. Utah's gonna be the 8th seed, and then Utah in six.
Utah in six against the President's Trophy winning Kings. Wow. I hope you're being satire.
I'm dead serious.
You're dead serious?
I'm always dead serious.
Shut the fuck up. Let's hop into our breakout candidates heading into this season. We have some interesting names here. We have 5 names, but we're not strictly going off of, okay, last season they had 60 points. They could put up 80 points. We're not fucking doing this. We're guys that showed some promise, but also guys that we think can really put a name for themselves up in the league. Let's start off with one of our guys on the Buffalo Sabres, Jiří Kulich, a center. He's being thrown into the number one center role, considering Tage Thompson is effectively going to be a winger full-time now.
Yeah.
And by the way, the Benson, Kulich, and Thompson line looked phenomenal. They had an expected goals for percentage of close to 60% the last month of the season.
Yeah, but let's not talk about defense.
Yeah. No, I won't.
Because Kulich, the reason I threw Kulich onto this list is another thing I was thinking about when we came up with this is, you know, A, you know, how they were the year before and where I could see them going, and B, what kind of role they're going to be thrown into on their current team. And Kulich is a player to me that I feel like it's inevitable that he's going to get better just due to how much the Sabres are going to rely on him, because their top 6 depth isn't great. And most teams, like a player of his stature would probably be a third line center just to let him develop. But the Sabres don't have a ton of center depth. Their top 2 centers are Kulich and Josh Norris. And Josh Norris is a 2C. I could see Josh Norris probably starting the year as the 1C. See him. We didn't really see him play that much last year. He played like, what, 3 games for the Sabres? 3 or 4?
I think he got hurt in his 3rd or 4th game.
Yeah, and so he would ideally be on that top line with Tage Thompson. But you know, Kulich and Tage did look good together, so we'll see how that starts. But regardless, Kulich is probably going to be at least your second line center. And the Sabres, Lindy Ruff trusts him a lot already. He was playing important minutes last year for the Sabres, and I think he showed a lot of promise as a rookie, scoring 15 goals, which is like, oh, 15 goals is not a lot, but it's not bad for a late first-round pick. He has a lethal shot, and I think it's just inevitable that he's going to get better.
And those 15 goals, he played most of the season only playing like 12, 13 minutes a night.
Yeah,
too.
As the season got low, like deeper, he started playing more because Lindy Ruff started to trust him more. But
not only that, but also the Sabres were basically out of it for the entire season.
Yeah, they were thinking, like, fuck it, you're a 1C now.
After the deadline. And
especially after Norris got hurt.
Yeah, when Norris got hurt. And Tage has never been good on faceoffs either. I think Kulich actually was pretty solid in the dot last season.
And yeah.
Throwing him the first line center, solid. Next up on our list, Shane Wright of the Seattle Kraken. We actually have 2 Kraken together. You know, let's do them together.
Sure.
Shane Wright and Kaapo Kakko.
Yeah.
2 guys that when Kaapo Kakko actually got to Seattle, these 2 guys looked phenomenal. I know the previous season, the 23-24 season, we saw some glimpses of Shane Wright, but he didn't really put it together, right? He was still struggling. It's taking him longer to develop, which is perfectly fine. Kaapo Kakko gets traded to Seattle in December, middle of January or something last season. Kaapo had 30 points in 49 games. Shane Wright also took that next step last season. I'm expecting both these guys together to really start to put it together and give us a very productive season.
Yeah, Shane Wright was a player I was always pretty high on. I thought when he fell to Seattle a few years ago at 4, I thought they might have got one of the biggest steals of the first round. Because my issue with Seattle is, and we've talked about this before, is I think they have too much of certain kinds of guys, and I think centers is you always say, oh, having too many centers is never an issue, but I think you have too many centers that are kind of the same. Mm-hmm. And you have, I think that's kind of held back Manny Beniers from kind of taking the next step, because, you know, they bring in Chandler Stephenson last year, he's a great player. He's a good second line center on any team in the league. But then you have Beniers, who is a second line center, maybe first line center. And then you have a guy developing as Shane Wright, who ideally at this point in his career would probably be a 2C, right? So you have three second line centers on your team. And I think out of all the centers on the team, I honestly think Shane Wright is going to end up being the best out of all of them. I think he has a much higher ceiling than Manny Beniers. Mm-hmm. And I think he should, but I think by the end of the year, I think he might end up being their 1C.
This is how I felt like Seattle went into last season. They wanted either Beniers or Stephenson to be the one line, the first line center, yeah, and then Shane Wright to be the third line center. And I agree with you. I think by the end of this season, Shane Wright will be the first line center for Seattle. I think he has, again, the highest ceiling. He might have the lowest floor out of all of them. But overall, especially when you're in a position like Seattle, you have to go with the higher ceiling guy, because they have a bunch of guys that are middle six guys that, if you have just a couple of superstars, that the forward group at least is actually really good.
But
the
fact that bad. They don't have, I think they're desperately missing like a first line player though.
Yeah, that's the point.
They don't have that first line elite guy. Like Jerry McCann, really good player. Most teams, he's probably a second line player.
Yeah, it's Seattle is in that situation where they have about probably six guys that are second and third line guys, but obviously three of them have to play first line. And I, outside of really Shane Wright and McCann, I don't necessarily see guys that can really be those. Although Jerry McCann, he can give you 30 goals a season.
Yeah, Jerry McCann's a great player.
And if you're running I don't know who their right wings are outside of Kako, to be honest with you, off the top of my head.
Let me bring up their depth chart. Okay. So like Jaden Schwartz, another vet, Jordan Eberle, Mason Marchment, they made that trade that I don't really get that one. But yeah, Eli Tolvanen. Yeah, they don't really have a great, like Jerry McCann's their best winger.
Kako is a right winger, right?
Kako is a winger as well. Yeah, so he should ideally be on that first line as well.
You know what? I would run McCann, Wright, and Kako, at least to start the season.
Should be a high scoring line. I don't know about
the defense is rough. I know
McCann's not very much of a two-way player.
No, he's not. I mean, he can contribute offensively.
Oh, he's a sniper, yeah.
Shane Wright's not great defensively. Kako's not great.
Shane Wright, I think, could be a complete two-way center.
Yeah, he can develop into one.
Because he's more of like a power forward kind of guy anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think he can be like an all-around complete 1C.
I agree.
Seattle needs him to be here. They're fucked because I think Beniers is at best a second-line center.
I wonder if Beniers already hit his ceiling, like genuinely.
I think after his first year going into second year, when he kind of took a step back, because it's not necessarily his fault, it's just the situation Seattle's in. They're kind of handcuffing him.
Wait, how so? Like just the way that they're using him in a way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just because they have so many of the same kind of guy. Yeah. And then you bring in a guy like Shane Wright has to play. Like, I know he fell to you at four, but then they keep drafting centers as well.
They went out.
Drafted Jake O'Brien. They have Catton Berkeley. Mm-hmm. I probably said Berkeley Catton. Sorry, Berkeley Catton. Also on the pipeline as two centers. So you have two more young centers coming up the line. Those are good players. They're gonna have to play.
You're gonna have to move two wingers over to. I mean, two centers over.
But
the
then
wing.
The thing you got me is Stephenson's on a long term deal, and so is Beniers. So where do all those guys add up? Is that when you potentially trade one of them to get your top six forward or a top line winger that you desperately needed?
It's not a great strat, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's just kind of just throwing shit at the wall. Like, they could be a playoff team for sure, but I don't think they have, like, the scoring that's good enough to be a contending playoff team.
You know what they're doing? They're grabbing Cook's... Well, they're just grabbing Cook's spaghetti and throwing it at the wall, hoping it sticks right.
Exactly, yeah. And their goaltending situation doesn't help either. Decord's fine. You know, I don't know if he's a full-time starter in the league, and then you have what's left of Philip Grubauer at this point. They're kind of, I'm assuming they're going to buy him out after this season.
You're not getting rid of him unless you buy him out.
Yeah, interesting.
I do think Joey Decord can become a reliable starter. Now, he has been the last two seasons in Seattle. He actually has been a reliable starter. 23, 24, he had a goals against of 2.5 and I think like a 9.16 save percentage. Last season took a little bit of a step back, 9.06 with like a 2.7 or 2.8. However, though, a lot of the Seattle team did take a little bit of a step back, except for those few younger players and, of course, Jared McCann. Like, Schwartz is getting older. Eberle is getting older. Some of the guys on a blue line are just not great. Outside of Vince Dunn, like, it's not great. You have Alexiak playing top 4 minutes. Like, that's just not a recipe for success.
Yeah, their defense is a big liability, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, their top pair, Dunn and Montour. I mean, that's fine, Larson, Alexiak, and then they bring in Ryan Lindgren this year as a UFA, but
They have a bunch of guys. A bunch of guys is definitely how to word it. Next up is Simon Edvinson of the Detroit Red Wings. He looked promising last season with the Red Wings.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Just given their blue line situation, he kind of had to step up and play a lot. You know, his first full year in the league last year, and he averaged over 21 minutes a night, which for a first full year in the league is a lot.
Edvinson and Sider play together for a lot of the time?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure where I would get that data from, where they have specific pairs.
Actually, let me check that on Money Puck, now that I think about it.
Yeah, that would be a good place to have it, yeah. But Edvinson, to me, is a player I was already pretty high on to begin with, and I thought he had an extremely... Like, I would consider last year his rookie year, really. I know he played about, like, 15, 16 games a year beforehand, but, you know, this is his first full year in the league. And I thought he looked awesome. And I think if you're a Detroit fan, you think about the prospect of Edvinson and Sider being a long-term pair. I can't think. That's crazy. That's an elite pair.
Yeah, to start off the season, it was Edvinson and Johansson at 505 minutes. And about halfway through, it turned into Edvinson Sider at 500 minutes. And their expected goals percentage was 51.6, which was the highest out of any pair that played more than 362 minutes.
Yeah, that to me, if I'm a Red Wings fan, I look at that potential pair for like next 10 years and we're like, oh, we have our top two defensemen,
you know,
right there.
If you're a Red Wings fan, you have to be happy that everybody except Edvinson and Sider is expiring after this season, because
the rest of the blue line after those two is awful.
Yzerman has to rebuild the blue line, like, in one off season.
Do you think he'll get the chance to rebuild the blue line after this season?
If they don't make the playoffs, I would fire Yzerman.
I don't know if there's a playoff team, though. Just look at this team. I know they bring in John Gibson, but is John Gibson still that good?
I mean, he's good. I don't know if he's that goaltender that can carry you anymore.
But the problem with him in Anaheim was the defense in front of him wasn't that great. Is it that much better in Detroit?
I think Detroit, you're going to have a lot of defensive breakdowns like Anaheim in a way. The only difference in Anaheim was everybody's super young, so you can sit there and be like, well, their blue line's young. Now there's an excuse.
Yeah, I think Detroit's running out of excuses.
They are running it. I think Gibson is the last hope. If Detroit does not make the playoffs with Gibson, I think Yzerman's fired, because you just brought up that point. There are no excuses on why this team misses the playoffs, except Yzerman, you failed to build a blue line. And at that point, it's on him.
I agree. I think their biggest liability has been their blue line. I don't think the goaltending's been the reason they haven't made the playoffs the last few years.
Cam Talbot was solid last season for them. Next up on our list, we have, last but not least, Will Smith. I feel the same about Will Smith like I did Eklund last season. And look at Eklund. I don't mean to toot my own horn. He fucking broke out in a huge way. Will Smith had 45 points in 74 games last night. Okay, let's not talk about his defense. He was a fucking rookie last season.
Yeah,
okay?
He's a rookie. And yeah. Probably the worst defensive team in the league last year. Can we agree on that?
Yes, I agree. Yeah. I agree. Don't look at his defense. I know I preach that. I'm being hypocritical right now. Fuck you. So... however, though, his offense, his power play time, his even strength time, he was above replacement level, which is good, especially for a 20-year-old rookie coming out of college. And I overall think that this season, another year with Celebrini, another year with Toffoli, he can put up 55 points, 60 points is a stretch. I know that's a lot of a turnaround and a bit of a next step. But I think that he can take that next step into becoming an elite playmaking offensive center. Or, I mean, he plays some wing too on the top line as well.
I mean, just think about this future for the San Jose Sharks. You know, you get Macklin Celebrini last year with the number one overall pick. You already had Will Smith, and now you add Michael Misa, man. When those three pan out, man, they're going to be good for a long time.
The top six of San Jose is legitimately has so much potential. It's like
Macklin's still a very young player. Like, they got to work on the defense a little bit, but
They think
they have their goaltender of the future in Askarov. I think in 2 or 3 years, I think you could see San Jose being a legitimate playoff contender.
I'm looking at the San Jose Sharks prospect pool right now in terms of blue line depth. Well, I guess blue line prospects, because they have Sam Dickinson coming
up.
Yeah,
that was a really good pick last year, I thought. They moved up to get him with Buffalo. Yeah, I thought that was a really strong pick.
They have, who else defensively? Is that everybody? Is that literally the only, there? I swear to God, there is one other guy defensively that I'm thinking of.
I can't say his last name.
Are you talking about Luka?
Shakir Mook.
Oh, Mooka Mandulin. Yeah. I probably butchered that. Yeah, he's solid. He's solid. Yeah. I mean, the
I'm just trying to look at their younger players. I mean, Sam Dickinson is clearly the best out of the bunch.
I think he'll be ready for the NHL very soon.
I agree. I think right the way San Jose is right now, if you look at their blue line of who they added, they added a lot of defensemen this offseason. Mm-hmm. They signed Dmitry Orlov, John Klingberg. They claimed Nick Leddy off of waivers from St. Louis. So that's three 30-plus-year-old defensemen, very veteran guys that are fine. And then you look at the Mario Ferraro, Timothy Lindgren, and Vincent Desharnais. That top six isn't going anywhere, and I don't see a reason why Dickinson would need to play this year in the NHL.
No, and you look at all the defensive contracts. They're all on shorter-term deals.
Oh, the only one that is not expiring next year is Dmitry Orlov's.
And he only signed a two-year deal.
Yeah.
This is the plan that Greer has. You lock up all your young fours long term, and when you sign these veteran guys, you don't want to sign them for fucking 3-year deals at $5.5-6 million. Mm-hmm. That's not a recipe for success. Greer, he signed everybody to $4 million or less on 1-year deals, except Orlov, which I think Orlov deserved the 6.5, especially probably had to give him a little bit extra money to come play for a bad team at the age of 34 already.
Yeah.
And everybody else is just a lot of veteran guys that can help this team in terms of just giving them leadership. And, you know, Dickinson, this gives him time to develop for another year. He doesn't have to come into the NHL and light it up right away. And like I said, he's ready for the NHL right now, I think, but give him another year to develop. It's not always a bad thing. And San Jose is not expecting to be this team to light the world on fire and really compete, but I think they will take the next step. And sure, it might suck for Askarov's numbers to play behind this blue line and just defense in general in the forward group, but this team's going to score. They might allow a lot of goals, but they're going to score, and they're going to be fun to watch. And this team reminds me a little bit of probably what Montreal was a couple years ago.
That's a good comparison, yeah.
Just a team that has a lot of young talent. They don't quite have that defensive talent just yet, except a guy or two. And Greer can always go out and get defensemen, whether it's via draft or whatever.
Yeah, I think with the Sharks, they're interesting because I think a year or two ago, we were kind of questioning what the plan was. You know, they were trading out all these veteran guys, retaining salary on all of them. Like, I get with Erik Karlsson with that contract, it kind of limits that return, especially. Mm-hmm. But they did end up retaining money on that. I think they still have... they have two... They're retaining salary also on Thomas Hertl's contract, which was another kind of puzzling trade, you know, given the circumstances. It just kind of came out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
Because what did they get back for him? They got a first-round pick in David Edstrom. So, that was just, yeah, I think it was just them trying to...
Offload money
for a guy they didn't see as part of their future. Maybe he was too good for them right now. But, you know, they end up winning the draft lottery last year and mm-hmm. getting Macklin Sudlabrini, which changes things. Anytime you get the number one overall pick, that changes things. They didn't win the lottery this year. I think they would have liked to have Michael Schaefer. I think they would have loved to have that mm-hmm. pick. But you can't be upset about getting Michael Misa. He arguably may be the best player in the draft. You know, I think Schaefer being a defenseman is kind of what put him at the number one spot, because it's just so hard to find a number one defenseman.
It's so hard. I know you've brought up this comparison many times, where it's just 2021 Owen Power getting picked first overall. It's hard, especially when...
You can't pass up the prospect.
Right, especially when the defensive class is so weak in the draft, too. Mm-hmm. You just can't pass up on a guy like that to be a potential number one guy. And especially when you already had Macklin Celebrini the year before. And I know having Schaefer would be so nice for them, but the fact that they fell from 1-2 and getting Misa, who I think has a higher ceiling than Schaefer, is overall not a bad pick. And he could be a guy that a great two-way forward and give you 80 points. But again, it's all about how he develops with the rest of the group up front.
Yeah, I think the future, I think San Jose might have another down year this year, but I think the future is very bright.
The future, they have one of the brightest futures in the league, genuinely.
Yeah.
All right, quick time out before we get back to the action. This episode is brought to you by Dubby Energy. Listen, hockey's fast, and whether you're breaking down plays, yelling shoot from the couch, or just getting in a workout, you've got to stay sharp. That's where Dubby comes in. Clean energy with zero sugar, no crash, no artificial flavors or dyes. Just 150 milligrams of caffeine per serving. About 2 cups of coffee's worth to keep you locked in and ready to go. Personally, I use Dubby before the gym, on the ice, and even when prepping content for the pod. If you need that extra spark, whether you're grinding through work, lifting, or lacing up the skates, Dubby's got you covered. Head over to Dubby.gg and use code CFBPOD for 10% off your order. That's Dubby.gg, code CFBPOD for 10% off your order. Fuel up, stay locked in, and let's get back to the episode. Let's hop into our underrated players in the league. Screw it. We're trying to figure out something to talk about. We're like, fuck it. Why not do underrated players? Because last week, I know I got grilled by people on social media and Preston for having Clayton Keller as my 10th best winger in the league.
Oh, people were roasting you too?
Yeah, they okay. All called you a puck knower in the comment section. So, yeah, that was interesting to read that.
Yeah.
So, underrated players in the league. We came up with 5 players who we think that should just get more recognition on their name. Number one, Connor Garland of the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah. So, this was a player I saw kind of raising some eyebrows with the extension that Vancouver gave him. $6 million a year. They're like, Connor Garland? $6 million a year? Look at his numbers. He is one of the best defensive forwards in the league. They could also put up like 50 points.
Well, he could give you 60 points and be one of the better defensive forwards in the league.
So I think him at $6 million a year, what was it, like a 6x5?
It's a 6x6, I think.
I think that is honestly a great contract. I think if he would have, I know he had a year left on his deal this year, but I mean, you can't pass up the money. But if I was him, I would have played this year out. You could have got a lot more money.
Dude, you could have gotten 7, 7.5 if you played like how you did the last few seasons.
Yeah, but you can't pass up the money in the term when it gets offered to you. Yeah, he had 50 points last year in 81 games for Vancouver. Yeah, he's a really important player to their team. Like I said, he's been an analytical darling for the last few years. And like, look at his defensive numbers. So they're great.
97th percentile in defense. His offense could be a little bit better, but again, a lot of players just have roles in the league. Not everybody's going to be the same player. You have Garland, who he can give you offense.
But he had 50
points
last year. Like, he's meant to be more of a defensive two-way forward, and you're getting 50 points out of him. That's still amazing.
That's great. And one of the brighter spots in the Vancouver Canucks dumpster fire.
I think the biggest thing for Vancouver going into this year, because I don't think they're going to be great anyway. Mm-hmm. They'll be like a fringe wild card team, but they were able to kick Brock Besser. Their scoring would have fallen off a cliff if he would have walked to free agency.
Yeah.
And then you keep Garner Garland for 6 more years, and now you have those guys locked up long term, and now you can start to make some other moves. I think those are like big foundational assets for them to hold on to.
And now you also ended up extending Demko. If he stays on the ice, he's a top.
That contract is kind of... I'm still iffy on that contract, especially 50-50. With the full no movement clause, because we were trying to like justify it. And we're like, well, maybe they'll just trade him in a year. You know, the teams won't have to worry about negotiating a contract. No, he has a full no movement clause. So,
yeah, they're fine.
They're really banked in on him not being hurt. Because I agree, when he's healthy, he's great, but he has not been healthy.
It's a big if because he hasn't been healthy. The only season he's been healthy for a full year, I think, was 22-23. And then he got hurt in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So,
and then they trade Shelovs away, who I think was a good prospect to Pittsburgh.
For like nothing.
Yeah, for practically nothing. I mean, he could end up being nothing, but if he ends up being a solid star in the league, you look like an idiot.
Like that's, I remember when Demko extension happened and we went out with Jimmy and Zach and we were trying to justify it. We're like, oh, like, you know, maybe this is where in a couple of years they trade him and Shelovs is the backup. Well, I mean, the starter. Well, first off, no movement clause. Second, they traded Shelovs like 3 days later.
Yeah.
And we're like, what the fuck is the plan? But either way, though, Connor Garland, he deserves some recognition.
Yes, for sure.
Jake McCabe is next up on our list, a defenseman for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, defense, you know, it's solid, right? But his offensive game and his puck-moving status.
Yeah, I didn't
really
realize he'd be that high offensively. I always thought he was kind of underrated. He played in Buffalo for a very long time, and, I mean, they sucked. Yeah. So his play was always going to go under noticed. And he was in Chicago for a few years. And then Toronto ended up giving up a good amount to get him. I remember a few years ago.
Yeah.
And he can play top pair minutes. He's a solid second pair defenseman though. He eats time. He plays over 21 minutes a night for them. I think he's a very important piece to this team, and I think he's one of the reasons why Toronto is, I think, going to maybe make the next step next year.
Next up, we're talking about Eastern Conference Finals. Genuinely from the bottom of my heart. And he's a guy that can play on the power play, can play penalty kill. If the Nets pull it, he can be out there.
Yeah,
he's
comfortable no matter what situation.
Which is crazy because you don't look at Jake McCabe as a guy that will give you substantial minutes tonight half the time, but Toronto trusts him. Berube really, really trusted him.
I think Craig
Berube
has been really good for him.
He has been good for him. And overall, Jake McCabe is another guy that if he was on some other teams, potential first period defenseman at times. Obviously, depending on certain circumstances, but a very good second pair guy. Warren Fogle next up on his list, a very underrated defensive forward. I didn't realize he's in the 96th percentile.
Yeah, that's it was crazy. A big loss when Edmonton lost him in free agency. They just couldn't afford to keep him. But yeah, Warren Fogle is one of the he's kind of been one of those guys that have really risen the last few years. Mm-hmm. I think when the Oilers got to the Stanley Cup final a couple of years ago when he was on the team, I think that's when people kind of started to notice how good he was, and then LA picks him up as a good depth piece, and he's a super important piece on this team.
Everybody didn't bet, and I was like, oh, depth piece, whatever, and he excelled in LA.
Yeah.
And I love it that Fogle, when he was in the LA Kings locker room and something came out that when he was in the Edmonton locker room, that Edmonton doesn't take LA super seriously compared to some of these other teams. And Fogle tried to use that as motivation for the team. Obviously, it didn't pan out. They lost four straight and lost in six games.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
but I mean, 96th percentile in defense. He's in the 77th percentile in offense, which shocker to me, too, because he's a very good two-way guy, it seems like.
Oh, yeah. His last season was his best season of his career. He had 46 points, averaging. He almost jumped 3 minutes per in ice time per game. So LA was using him more, and he was a plus 36.
Plus 36.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's nuts. Warren Fogle, if the LA Kings somehow make a run, even though I feel like they got worse,
he's going to be a big piece for them.
He's going to be a huge piece. Yeah. Last but not least on our list, I know we talked a little bit about him, but Dylan Sandberg of the Winnipeg Jets, we'll just touch on him briefly here because he's an analytical darling, as we've noticed. He is a guy that will give you substantial minutes. He can play in any situation you ask him for. And again, he's a guy that holds the Winnipeg Jets blue line together. And honestly, if we're being realistic, if he wasn't on Winnipeg or if there was a situation where they couldn't retain him of some sort.
Oh, he'd be a highly sought after free agent.
He would be.
Yeah.
Everybody, there'd be some people in the media or some fans that aren't really, that I guess are casuals, be like, why are teams willing to give him $6 million? Because he is a very, very, very good defenseman. And there's some guys out there in the league, like Sandberg, that their analytics show that they are a very good player. And overall, they don't get a ton of recognition. So just wanted to bring some recognition to these guys on the list because this wasn't some obvious guys. I wanted to throw Keller and Connor out there. But though everybody fucking says
that. I mean, those guys are like borderline superstars.
Yeah. And I also wanted to throw Brett on there as well. Those are like,
I think Brett has kind of become more well known. I think 2 years ago, if you would have called him underrated, I would agree with that. I think I always got frustrated because I didn't think people gave him enough credit. And I think this year, I think people get like, yeah, he's a great player.
Like, yeah, 80 points, 50 plus assists every single season. Great. And yeah. Top five players we want to build a franchise around right now. And we were thinking about this because originally when I put it down, I was thinking of Connor McDavid, Makar, and MacKinnon, and the superstars in the league, the obvious choices. But then this morning, we're like, fuck it. Let's do U23 players. It's a lot more interesting. And there's going to be some players that we leave off this list, but overall, we want to see them play a little bit more NHL hockey before making.
Yeah, I mean, some of the guys we were thinking about haven't even played a game yet.
Yeah,
so
let's show on them. But yeah. Starting off our list, Macklin Celebrini of the San Jose Sharks, a centerpiece. He is probably 1B for me in terms of players I want to start a franchise with right now. We'll get to the other player in a second. And
yeah, I think Celebrini to me is like a franchise piece. I thought he had an excellent, excellent rookie season on a really bad San Jose team. I think he jumped right into that 1C role right away, and I don't see him giving that up ever.
No, a guy who has two-way potential. Now, we're talking about two-way. I'm not talking about in terms of all-time great, like Barkov, whatever. but he has the potential to be one of the better two-way centers in the league. He can provide some defense for you. I think his ceiling is probably 90th percentile in both offense and defense, mm-hmm. and can give you 70, 80 points. And we saw last season he started off a little bit slow, but he was a rookie. He was just coming into the league. We all expected that. Second half of the season, started to get point after point, started to get better defensively and being more responsible in all phases and understanding that there's more to hockey besides just point scoring. Mm-hmm. And of course, every player that first enters the league, they want to be able to light it up right away. And we saw that development from Celebrini. And I think Warfkowski did a phenomenal job in helping guide Celebrini. And of course, bringing in Tyler Toffoli, which, by the way, I thought was a very smart yes. move last offseason. Not only for in aspects of production, but also just helping out the younger guys that were there. A guy who's been, honestly, kind of a journeyman the last five, six seasons being mm-hmm. on. I think he's been on like four teams the last six seasons, something like that. And helping these guys offensively, defensively, in and off, on and off the ice. And it's been phenomenal to watch Celebrini.
Yeah, for sure. And then second, this should be another obvious one, is Connor Bedard. I'm assuming yep. he's your 1A.
Yeah, he's my
1A. We were talking about in Chicago, like another franchise-defining piece. Like, yeah, these first two are going to be obvious no matter what.
Yeah,
I think the biggest issue with him in Chicago is I don't think they're giving him the support he needs right now. I think, would you agree with me in saying there's a lot more pressure on Bedard than Celebrini?
By far.
Because, A, he's in a much bigger market in Chicago, a hockey market, who has a storied history. You know, they had a dynasty in the last decade. Now you're the new face of the franchise, you know, replacing Jonathan Taves and Patrick Kane. The problem is, you know, he doesn't have that second piece to help him along. They think they might have got that in Anton Frondell this year at number three overall, which I think could be a really solid pick. Probably he's going to need a year to see. Well, I think he could play in the league this year. But, I mean, Chicago's going to be awful again this season.
Yeah. The Connor Bedard is in a tough spot. There's clips going around him in social media. He's working his ass off.
Oh, he cares, yeah.
Dude, his shot is better than what it ever has before. His release, his toe drag release, his snapshot, his one-timer, everything is like pinpoint. And Bedard is similar to Celebrini, except I think Bedard has a way higher offensive ceiling, and I think he has a little bit of a lower defensive ceiling. But Connor Bedard, listen, he's already one of the better skaters in the league, already has one of the better shots in the league, and he is going to drive play. And it sucks seeing him last season. It looked like he was so, like, down on himself.
I think he was just frustrated because there'd be plays where he does everything right, and then his teammates make mistakes, like dumping it in, like on an empty net situation, or he's putting the puck in the right place and the guy just makes his bonehead decision once he gets the puck. Like, it's not his fault.
It's not his fault, which makes it frustrating for everybody watching him.
And I think part of the issue, too, is I think he puts too much pressure on himself because he knows how good he is. Mm-hmm. Trust me, he knows. Guys like that, they know how good they are. And he sees how bad the team is, and I'm sure he's putting pressure on him. He's like, I got to fix this. Like, I'm here for a reason. We're bad. I'm going to make him good. And I think, you know, he'll start off a game and, like, he'll get frustrated. And you're going to see, like, in his body language, like, he's getting frustrated with what's going on the ice.
Yeah, and a lot of times when guys get frustrated, then things start to unravel. And it's not Bedard's fault that the Blackhawks are one of the worst teams in the league. He's a franchise centerpiece, but you brought up Davidson is not doing a good job giving him substantial pieces. And I'm not saying that he should just go out and trade every single asset he has for guys.
No, I mean,
but like,
they still are in the midst of a rebuild. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, they kind of got lucky getting Connor Bedard. They won the draft lottery to get him.
But, like, if you're Davidson and you're not going out and getting any pieces, are you banking on fucking getting a first overall pick and getting McKenna this season?
Yeah,
like,
because that forward core is still really not good.
It's not good.
The only guys they really added is they added Andrei Burakovsky, who's coming off a couple down years in Seattle. And then they trade for Sam Lafferty to get him back in that bottom six. So you're pretty much running it back with the same top six you had last year. So Bedard's probably going to be lined up with Tyler Bertuzzi again, which I don't think is a good fit.
It didn't work last season. It's not going to work this season.
Yeah, and their defense, I expect Artem Leshinov to, you know, make the jump and be in the NHL full-time this year. But, you know, he's going to be a 19-year-old rookie defenseman in the league. I don't have super high expectations of him, especially on a team this bad. And then, you know, they think they have their goaltender in Spencer Knight. He looked okay when he first got into Chicago, but other than that, Soderblom's a decent backup. I think their goaltending is actually not that bad.
It isn't that bad.
But the defense in front of them is not going to help.
And their scoring does not help either.
Yeah, this is like another... Yeah, they might be a Gavin McKenna sweepstakes candidate.
It works out if they get McKenna. But
if they don't get Gavin McKenna, man.
If they don't get McKenna, it's like, Davidson, you either have to go get Bednar help or you're fucking fired, in my opinion.
I agree. Yeah.
And even if they do get McKenna, you still have to go out and get him out. Because McKenna's not going to come in and those two are going to put up 90 points together first season.
No, you still need pieces around him. Yeah. And that top six is just not – it's bad.
It's not good. It's not good. You need supporting pieces around him. All right, Matvei Michkov is next up on our list.
Yes.
Him and Zegras could absolutely run Philly for the
I'm excited to see how Zegras is. And I thought about him putting on the players I expect to like take them their jump next year, because I think Zegras is kind of – been in a system in Anaheim that doesn't really welcome his style of play.
Yeah.
And I think he's just such a creative player, and I think he's at his best when he's free-flowing and he's trying different things. And Anaheim was really, I think, limiting that. And injuries didn't help. He wasn't on the ice as much. And I think that kind of took away some of his confidence. But I think at Philly, you saw it last year when they ended up firing John Tortorella. Mm-hmm. Michkov looked way better. He was being more creative. He's taking more risk in his play. And these guys are going to take risks. That's just how they are.
Their play style, these two players' play style, I think fit each other perfectly. They're both guys that offensively, you honestly let them do whatever they want. If they want to do 10 Michigan flips ignite, like fucking let them.
I don't
them.
Know about that, but.
You get the point. But yeah. Michkov is another guy where if I had the third overall pick right now in a fantasy draft and it had to be U23 players, you couldn't take any superstars until the second round. I'm taking Michkov here, third overall.
Yeah, Michkov, and almost because he was in the same draft as Connor Bedard. I think Bedard almost any year will go be one over him. But in a lot of years, Michkov would have been a number one overall pick. But there was he's Russian, and there's a whole thing with Russia going on right now, and they weren't sure what teams he'd be willing to play for to come out, because he was on a KHL contract as well, which adds a little, you know, interesting aspects to it. But, you know, last year he had 63 points in 80 games for the Flyers. His play really jumped off when Tortorella left and he kind of got out of jail. And I think this guy could be a point-per-game player next year.
75 games, he's at 80 points.
I think he's a 100-point-plus player at his peak.
That's crazy. I mean, that's not crazy in terms of what I think, but...
No, I think he's that good. I'm not saying this year he's 100-plus point. Like two or three years, like when the Flyers are more established, I think he can be a 100-plus point player.
I don't hate that. And you know what I really hope for, if you're a Philly fan, is Zegras find himself again and Michkov to take that next step, and both these guys light it up for you. Although goaltending isn't great and your defense is not great either, but
that's they can score a lot.
Yeah, they can score a lot. Next up, another obvious choice, Layden Hudson, already an elite defenseman for the Canadiens. A defenseman where he already is close to, he's honestly in a lot of people's top 20s already, coming off a rookie year, winning the Calder pretty handily, if you ask me. And a guy that can give you 80 points this season at his peak, I think. A guy who his defense was not good last season, but he's going to get better defensively.
I mean, let's be honest. How many guys have a really good defense on the Canadiens last year?
Really not.
The big story with them last year is they were so good offensively that the defense didn't really matter that much.
And they had to rely on Montembeau.
Montembeau was good enough.
Yeah,
I still think they lack a long-term goaltender right now. Mm-hmm. But Montembeau's a good stopgap until you find that guy.
And... yeah, Montembeau has another 3 years left on his deal, I believe, but that gives Fowler and Dobesh to really develop. And I know Dobesh came onto the roster as a full-time backup at the end of last season. I think that him and Fowler are going to be, a very good duo for a while, but Fowler is still being in college last season. He's going to need some time to develop, and I think Dobesh can sit behind Montembeau, and this is a good situation where Montembeau... this is going to sound crazy, okay? This is really going to sound crazy. His analytical stats last season supported that he was a top 10 goaltender in the league.
I don't disagree.
Obviously, I wouldn't. If I'm making a top 10 goaltender list, I'm not putting him in my top 10, but he's a guy that I want to mention.
Think of all the rage bait you get online.
No, not all the rage bait. No. Montembeau is an honorable mention at least. Top 15 goaltender. And
top 15 maybe, not top 10 honorable mention.
No. Well, if it's top 10, I don't know. I'd have to look at my list. Okay. He's not top 10, though. Don't worry.
No, he's not top 10.
No, he's not. I don't know where we're going
I'm
with
I'm curious
this.
With Lane Hutson, though. Like, this is the last year of his rookie contract. He's an RFA. Mm-hmm. How much money he's going to ask for? How much they're going to pay him? Because they just gave Noah Dobson a lot of money. 9.5. Line is a UFA. Does he walk?
That's a great question.
I don't know if they could afford to keep both of them.
I would let Line A walk. If he's not scoring, he's a liability.
I agree. I mean, maybe they trade him at the deadline.
That's true.
But, you know, you have a lot of guys. You're paying a lot of money. Suzuki, Caulfield, Slavkovsky, Dobson, like I said, 9.5. I mean, Lane Hutson, he's got to get more than Dobson, right? Is he getting $10 million a year right off his rookie contract? If he, like, takes another step this year?
If he takes another step, this is going to sound crazy. You throw $12
million. Like, if he's a Norris finalist this year, how much money is he getting?
$13 million.
Because the Norris has kind of turned into what defenseman has the most points kind of contest.
Just stupid.
Yeah, it used to be, best defenseman is, like, you have to play defense, too. I mean, Kale McCarr, I think, is the best two-way defenseman in the league.
I mean, I think either way, getting 30 goals as a defenseman, he would have gotten it either way.
But I think Erik Karlsson kind of broke that when he had 100 points. It was like, obviously, he had 100 points. Yeah. He had an incredible season, but his defensive numbers were horrible.
He was in the first percentile.
It was just because San Jose, he was their number one forward.
I think with Lane Hutson, genuinely, first off, he can't be Norris finalist this season. Two, I think $13 million if he does become a Norris finalist.
That would be insane off a rookie contract.
That would be insane.
Yeah.
Especially, do you just have 2 years in the league? Or what if Lane Hutson pulls this? He's like, I want $4 million by 11. Sorry, 4 years by 11.
I could see him doing that. I think that's more of, I think Montreal, obviously the longer term, the better for you. But the longer the years are, the less money overall over the years. It's like, okay, so we'll give you 8 years at like an $80 million contract. Right. But and then Hudson's like, well, no, I'll do a 4 year, $50 million contract
for my 15. I mean, I guess you're starting high, but
I'm just making up numbers. I don't pay.
I want you guys to roast him right now.
OK,
no, just kidding. I mean, the money will be insane, though, for Hudson. But
I mean, they're already a team, like they're technically over the cap right now. But they haven't put Carey Price in LTIR yet, so they'll free up $10 million. So they will be under the cap to start the season. But they already spend really close to the cap. You're going to have to pay Lane Hutson. I think Line A just has to walk.
I think that's the only option. And especially if they're in playoff contention, which I expect them to, they're not probably going to trade Line A.
I don't think they'll trade him unless they're like something horrifically bad happens this season.
And somebody like dies.
Whoa.
just kidding.
Whoa.
Let's hop into our last guy, Dustin Wolf. He was the Calgary Flames team last season, and I know it's kind of, a curveball throwing a goaltender in here, but spice things up a little bit because he carried that Calgary Flames team. He was a Calder finalist. He's going to be a potential top five goaltender in his prime,
I think he's going to be an elite goaltender in a year or two.
I would call him borderline elite now.
I mean, he's really good.
You wouldn't give him the elite status yet?
No.
Just after
I need to see more play. I need to see him play more. I agree with you. He's a big part of why Calgary was even relevant last year.
Yeah.
Because if you look at their forward core, it's not the greatest. It's kind of old.
It is very old.
I think Kadri ends up getting traded this year. I'm going to be completely honest with
Kadri
you.
Kadri does.
Huberdeau can't be moved.
Nope. Unless they retain 50%.
They're not doing that.
I'm not saying he's going to get traded, but I'm just throwing out options.
Kadri, I could see them moving.
Yeah, but I think Kadri's their best player, and unless they're out of it,
I don't think they're a playoff team next year.
I think they're close to a playoff team as
possible. I think they're going to end up trading Rasmus Anderson.
I think they'll probably end up trading him at some point. I don't know if they're going to this offseason.
Well,
from what I've
heard, Anderson has his heart set on going to Vegas.
He doesn't want to be in Calgary at all.
But from what I've heard, the only team he'd trade to and sign an extension with is Vegas.
Does he have a full no movement at the moment?
I'm not sure. I think he does. Let me check.
Well, if that's the case, and
he
just
has a modified
no
trade clause. But I think the thing is, teams want him to sign an extension, and he won't. I think he said the only team he signed an extension for would be if he got traded to Vegas, and I don't think they can afford him right
now. They can't afford him. So you're stuck in Calgary, I guess, and I guess Calgary is stuck with him And
I mean, there could be worse situations for the Flames. He's a good defenseman.
How many more years has he left? That does he have one more year?
His deal.
Okay.
He's a UFA at the end of the season, so I think they end up trading him just because they're not a playoff team. Why let him walk for nothing? At least get what you can for him.
I mean, if he won't sign an extension to anybody, I guess the only teams really looking to get him
maybe a rental,
would be
yeah,
a contender, a cup contender at that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could be another situation. It could be another situation where it's a team, not Florida in general, but just a team like Florida that goes out.
I don't know if they have the assets to give up.
No, sorry. Yeah. Not Florida, but a team like Florida, what they did last year with Seth Jones and Marchand or whatever.
Yes.
Maybe a team that gets an injury to their blue line has a cap space.
I wouldn't rule out Vegas trading for him. I don't know if they'd be able to sign him right away, but if the contract's not that bad. It's 4.5, so it's a very tradable deal.
But
even if Calgary has to eat half of it, I mean, Vegas is always swinging for the fences, and if they can find a way to make the money work, they'll do it.
I mean, and you brought up a good point where the only issue is not this year's deal. It's the contract extension. How much money is he going to want? Is he going to want $7, $8 million, which I'm assuming is the ballpark it's going to be around?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this could be another Noah Hanifin thing where Anderson isn't traded, and then last second, here comes Vegas swooping in and is like, we'll give you these assets for Anderson, and then the extension happens right away. Because I remember when Hanifin got traded, everybody did not think Vegas had the cap space to extend him, and then they fucking did it anyways.
Yeah.
This could be another one. I'm just speculating, not saying it's going to happen.
Well, it can happen.
It can happen.
Yeah.
Last but not least, hopping into part three out of part four, my top 10 lists in the NHL. This week, it's top 10 defensemen, and if you guys are new to the podcast, you guys all know.
I'm scared.
I give my top 10 list, and honorable mentions. Preston, tell me how much of a fucking idiot I am, and yeah, that's that. Honorable mentions, Charlie McAvoy and Roman Josi. Not off to a bad start, are we? Number 10, Victor Hedman. Number 9, Evan Bouchard. Number 8, Josh Morrissey. Number 7, Jacob Slavin. Number 6, Miro Heiskanen. Number 5, Zach Werenski. Number 4, Rasmus Dahlin. Number 3, Adam Fox. Number 2, Cale Makar. And number 1, Quinn Hughes. Shoot.
I know you're always going to say, I know you're a Quinn Hughes guy, but Cale Makar is the best defenseman in the league.
I know. I'm being a homer here. My heart goes with Quinn Hughes. My mind knows it's Cale Makar, by the way.
I mean, he's won 2 Norris trophies. Quinn Hughes is clear number 2. And don't get me wrong, but I will argue till the end of time that Cale Makar is the best defenseman in the league right now.
Let's take a look. Can I made an argument for this. May I?
You're going to pull up analytic bullshit. I don't care. Cale Makar is like the best defenseman in the league right now.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I have a bunch of analytics. But
I mean,
on.
Roman Josi, I don't know if he's even an honorable mention anymore. He kind of fell off a cliff last season. I know he had some injury issues, but he's getting older.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie McAvoy, I think, could be on the top 10 list if he had played a full season last year.
I agree. That was the only issue. I did the same thing with him like I did with Jack Hughes.
I think Victor Hedman should be higher on the list.
Okay.
I still think he's an elite stud defenseman. He's still amazing for Tampa Bay. Bouchard, my issue with Bouchard is, yeah, he's great in the playoffs, but he's kind of a defensive liability. I don't know. I think if I would push him probably out of the top 10 if McAvoy had played a full season.
That was my thing. I wanted to put Hedman higher, but thinking of Bouchard's offensive abilities, I just couldn't pass it up. And if McAvoy, even if McAvoy just missed like 10 games or something, he would be in over Bouchard, but just his offensive ability.
I would probably put Hedman up as close as 7 or 6.
Really?
I think Slavin's great. I think he's super underrated as a defenseman too. I think you saw a bit of his coming out party in like the Four Nations face-off with how good he was for Team USA. But Victor Hedman, I still think, is an elite top 5 defenseman.
I don't think he's necessarily top 5 anymore.
He's still amazing.
Of course, he's so amazing. That's why he's number 10. But I think that he is starting to see a little bit of a decline. Not calling him a bad defenseman by any means, but it's just what happens when you get older.
Yeah, but I mean, Josh Morrissey, this is not really anything I could flame you for like last week with not having William Nylander on the list. But I mean, I think he played it very safe this time.
I did play it safe, but I haven't touched this list since I made everything together. Yeah. So,
do we see maybe Lane Hudson go on that list next year?
Lane Hudson will be on the list. I'm calling it right now. Lane Hudson will be on the list next season. He will be, unless he misses significant time.
I say too, like Fox had a bit of a down year last year. I think right now, I think Werenski and Dahlin are a little bit interchangeable. Werenski had an incredible season last year for Columbus as well. Dahlin is also a top five defenseman, in my opinion. Miro Heiskanen is another guy in that top five conversation as well. They're all great guy, all great defensemen. I don't really have too many issues with this. I would just pick Hedman a little bit higher.
I think that Quinn Hughes, I think, okay, if you put Makar over Hughes, I think they're interchangeable, but obviously the majority think that Makar is better than Hughes. And then, but those two are the one and two consensus. I think that three, four, and five are all interchangeable.
I agree.
Think Miro Heiskanen, it's slot at six. I think you can move Slavin down a little bit, but I really think Slavin, Morrissey are interchangeable, in my opinion, than I think Bouchard, Hedman, and McAvoy are interchangeable, in my opinion.
I would put Hedman above McAvoy and Bouchard, but clearly above Bouchard.
I mean, I can see the argument. I don't hate that.
Yeah, like I said, I think seven would be a good slot for me for Victor Hedman. I still think he's that great.
He is phenomenal.
He doesn't make mistakes.
No, very high IQ. That's going to end it for today's episode. If you guys enjoy all of our content, head over down to the description to follow us on all of our social media. Subscribe, notification bell as well, and we'll see you guys in our next episode.